This is from the 1997 Tyler Anniversary Old Timers Talks. Speakers include Laura J., Sherry H., and Sonny B.
All right, we're ready for speakers. The speakers, we had four of them set up to come, and Odetta wasn't able to make it at the last minute. And I added them up, the years that they had, and they had, can you believe this? The four speakers had 120 years between them. Now, Odetta had 31, and she's out, so these three guys left up here got about 90 years, which is an average of about 30 years apiece. Our first speaker, and I don't know her. I met her here this morning. That seemed to go off okay. We got along all right, didn't we? But I don't know her, but Olin knows her, and he handpicked her. She's from Jacksonville, and she happens to be Glenn's wife there. And y'all know Olin, and he's a good picker. So I'm looking forward to hearing from her. And would you come on up here? Let's give her a nice welcome.
Well, hi, everybody. My name is Laura, and I'm very definitely an alcoholic. A real one, too. And yeah, he's a nice person. Just ask me. I'll tell you any day. It's been through God's grace, working through people just like y'all, and meetings just like this, and my acceptance of God's grace in my life. I've been sober for 25 days and 10 months and 25 years. For this, I am extremely grateful. And I don't think there's anybody else in the world besides another alcoholic who understands what it means to be grateful for your sobriety. I think the Al-Anons are grateful some, you know, but since they didn't experience everything with all the feelings, maybe they lack just a little bit of that understanding. Not knocking Al-Anons, you know, groups not doesn't make a good stand if it doesn't have a good Al-Anon group, or at least that's been my experience. We're supposed to tell generally what we were like, what happened, and what we're like today. Everybody sitting in here knows what it was like. You don't necessarily know exactly what I was like, but you know what the things that I experienced were like. And How It Works says there are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but they too can recover if they have the capacity to be honest. When I got here, I really didn't know what an alcoholic was. I thought it was somebody that had, I never had seen a female, so I just thought they were all old men, and they had long beards and scraggly hair and one tennis shoe and a rope for a belt, you know. And I walked into my first meeting, and there were a lot of people there my age. Some of them were even younger. And I thought just for a second maybe I was in the wrong place. But seeing as how I was scared, slapped to death, I just sat down in the first chair that I saw that was empty. And I decided that I would listen. And I didn't want to, but I decided that I would. Because this person that had told me about Alcoholics Anonymous had been sober for 3 years. And I thought that was, well, how do you go that long without drinking? And he seemed like he was pretty happy. And so they had told me he'd been a pretty bad drunk. And, well, you know, if he can do it, maybe there's something there for me. The main thing I learned that night was that we do this thing one day at a time. And I hadn't got that down pat yet. I get carried away and try to do a week, a month, 6 months, what have you. And sometimes I have a very pessimistic attitude, and I assume when things don't go like I think they should, you know, then I get all bent out of shape. And I have to be real honest, because Glenn's here. And I can't fudge any, because he knows. I like to think sometimes that I'm really extremely well. And Jim said he had never known anybody that had gotten drunk from going to too many meetings. And I believe that's true. And the more we make, the easier it is. I know that's true for me. But every year from October to usually all the way through January, you pulled me out of it this year. But from October till the end of January, I'm not around Alcoholics Anonymous very much. My parents usually are here in October and November, and they're getting on in years, and I happen to like my parents real well. And surprisingly enough, they like me, and they like Glenn, and I enjoy being with them, and I don't like to take any time away from them other than having to go to work, and I wouldn't do that if I didn't have to eat. But then comes the holidays, and then it takes me a little while to recover. And so those 3 months in there seem to be probably the most difficult of my year. And you would think after a number of years of going through this that I would get the message that to survive better, I would need to make more than one meeting a month, you know. But I don't. And so whenever I get back into going to meetings, I think to myself, now why did I do that? Why did I struggle? Why did I get angry? Why did I get irritated, restless, and discontent? Why did I allow myself to go through that again? I can't tell you, other than the fact that I'm still selfish and self-centered, and I probably will be until the day that I die. I think I started off on something else, and I got on a different tangent, but, you know, I'm an alcoholic and I'm a female. What do you expect? At any rate, I want you to know that I qualified for this program. When I got here, it didn't take a whole lot of convincing to explain to me what an alcoholic was and that I was one. And the fact that you people had some blackouts and periods of time that you couldn't account for, and maybe somebody else tried to account for them for you, but you couldn't ever bring them to mind, made me know that this is where I needed to be, and that I was definitely one of you. And I haven't forgotten that. Even when I'm away for a while, I don't forget that I am an alcoholic. Now, I have some grave emotional and mental disorders, along with my alcoholism. But I didn't discover those until after I had been sober a pretty long time. On top of that, I have found out that that this program, not only the program but the fellowship as well, has the answers for me. And that if I'll just ask, somebody will point me in the right direction. And I've gotten help for every single problem I've ever had since I've been sober. And I can honestly say that the help that I have received, 99% has come from other alcoholics who have either experienced the same things or knew somebody that had and told me to go see them. I'm extremely grateful for that. I'm one of those drunks that doesn't know how to discern love from lust. I used to get in heat a lot, and I wasn't one of those people. So I got married a bunch of times, and that didn't improve after I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been married the same many times as I was out there. But I finally found one that not only I loved, but he could put up with me. Now, we won't ask him how, and don't anybody come asking, because he may get to thinking about it and change his mind. But I've had him for 16 years now, and he has put up with an awful lot of stuff, and don't be nodding your head. He has seen me through surgeries and my grave emotional and mental disorders, as well as my selfishness and self-centeredness. He's pretty much known when to leave me alone and when to pat me on the back and give me a little hug. He's always known when to tell me to go to a meeting. Not that I listened, but he's always known when to tell me that. I look at him as not only, you know, my husband, but an extremely dear friend. And if that's possible, I think I love him more than I did the day that we got married. And, you know, him being an alcoholic and us both being sober for a good long while before we got married, that's really helped. As one thing I want to talk about that's the dearest to my heart, other than the relationship that I have with my parents. I have two kids, two boys, one's 32 and one's 29. I know, I don't look old enough to have kids that old, but I do. And as a matter of fact, we have grandchildren that are 15 and 13. My oldest son started early. At any rate, my oldest son has always lived with his father, as he is doing now, and he's 32 years old. Our relationship has been real fragile, and there's been a lot of years, and a lot of sober years, when he wouldn't have anything at all to do with me, wouldn't speak to me, wouldn't accept a call, would not see me, would not write to me, would not accept letters from me. And I guess it's about 6 months ago, I got a letter in the mail. And I was real surprised. Shocked was the word. I was real shocked. And he even said that he might like to come and see us. Now, mind you, he hasn't done that yet. But I've had four letters in the last 6 months. But for me to go 32 years wanting to right a wrong, and I made my amends, and that's one of those times when, you know, we make our amends and we always hope and pray that the person will accept them and take them and welcome us with open arms. He did not. He just really didn't have any use for me. And I can understand that. I didn't mean I liked it. I just could understand that. And I don't know that I ever really accepted it. But it was one of those things I had to live with. My mother says you put it in a shoebox and you put the lid on it and you put it on the shelf in the closet and you close the door. And I tried to do that most of the time. I wasn't always successful. Anyway, as it was last week, I hadn't heard from him in about 6 weeks or so, and I thought maybe he was mad at me or, you know, whatever. Anyway, he sent pictures of the two oldest grandchildren. I still get choked up. We haven't seen them since they were like 6 and 4. Now he has two other children that we haven't ever seen yet, but we had seen the other two and had gotten a chance to get kind of close to them, and then they were snatched away from us. And it's like, you know, what goes around comes around. I know one thing for sure, that if I don't apply myself to this program and make an attempt to work these steps, my life gets to be just as big a mess as it was when I was drinking, except there's no alcohol in it. The 12th step says, as the result of these steps, we try to carry the message, practice these principles in all our affairs. It's real easy, at least it is for me, to practice the principles of this program in here with y'all, because y'all are pretty much doing the same thing. And I've gotten where I can do it some at home. I don't know if it would be any easier if I weren't married to another alcoholic, but I can do it, you know, a good percentage of the time at home. Now, work is another thing. And that's why I said, you know, I still haven't learned real well how to live one day at a time. People at work don't do like I want them to. Well, Glenn doesn't always do like I want him to. And Most of the time I tell him about it too. Not that that changes anything. I just speak my mind. Hopefully when I get close to time.
You're doing all right.
Okay. Because I forgot to look. Not that I can read my watch. I don't have my glasses on too. And there's no clock back there. I've been searching the walls. Alcoholics Anonymous not only saved my life, but it gave me a life. Not gave me back one. It gave me one. We talk about came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, and all I could think about was I never could remember being sane. And so what was I going to be restored to? If it meant being restored to the kind of thinking I had when I was 8, 9, and 10 years old, I knew I was going to be in serious trouble. Because even then, I wasn't real together. I had other things on my mind, like, for instance, being rich, being a movie star. I was going to get married real young and have a bunch of kids. I had the first one. I decided that wasn't for me. You know, that's just not me. I was going to be a housewife. I was going to be a lot of things. Being an alcoholic was not one of those things that I had in mind. But today, I'm glad I know what I am, who I am, and I know what to do when I get in trouble. And I'll talk a little bit about my younger son. He went through with me my alcoholism, not all of it, but some. And he's been with me practically day and night through the first years of my sobriety, I'll say the first 12. And unfortunately, he has grave emotional and mental disorders as well. He's not an alcoholic, thank God, but he has followed in my footsteps as far as the other things, and it's been a hard thing for him to accept. And I said to him, at least you know, at the age of 28 and 29, what it took me till I was 40-something to know. Now, that didn't make him feel a whole lot better, but it gave him something to think about. If I had not come to Alcoholics Anonymous, if I had not learned how to stay sober, if I had not worked the steps and continued to do 10, 11, and 12, mostly on a daily basis, I wouldn't have him either. The best thing I can say is that if you are new here, if you're new to our fellowship, and if you're scared like I was, don't let it run you away. Stick around. Do what the people tell you to do. Let them love you. It may be a while before you learn to love them back, but that's okay. Let them love you and show you the way. Because if you think about it real strong, your best thinking's what got you here in the first place. So if you had the answers, you wouldn't be here. And these people who have been sober longer than you have do. If they don't have the exact answer, they certainly know somebody who does. I want to thank all of y'all for being here. I know it's freezing cold, and I guarantee you I wouldn't be here. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know how to say no when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous and you people. I want to thank Olin for asking me, and I give you my love and my gratitude, and thank you for holding my hand and showing me the way until I could find a God of my own understanding who could hold me in his hand and keep me close and warm and safe until I found a way on my own. When I got here, I was under the impression that God helps those who help themselves. And I don't believe that today. If I could have helped myself, I would have. And it's still that way for me today. If I had the answers, I'd do whatever it was that was necessary. But I don't. God does. And all I have to do is ask Him. And I hope that each one of you sitting here finds the higher power, God of your own understanding, to show you how to, and to keep you into this fellowship, and to keep you working this program. And if something happens and you don't continue to stay sober, for God's sake, come back. Don't stay gone. Life is too short to live it out there, miserable. I think about living out there and it makes my skin crawl. But I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad y'all are all here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, if you don't want me to love you, don't tell me nothing about yourself. And Glenn, I've got like you a lot better too. You're 16 years, that's pretty admirable. You know, when we found out Odetta wasn't coming, Olin was a little bit concerned. He said, "You think them three old timers will be able to talk for an hour?" I said, "Is that some kind of joke, you know?" Has anybody had trouble finding a seat out there?
Yes.
Is anybody too hot? We want you to be comfortable in here. Our next speaker, I'm laughing to keep from freezing to death is what I'm doing. Our next speaker is a personal friend of mine. He was the only one I got to pick out of the bunch. And he used to come to our meeting. I go to Legacy over there at the First Christian Church. But he used to come over, and it was always a better meeting when he showed up. And one of the things that I can tell you about him, I don't know of a single person in this entire town that has helped as many alcoholics stay sober as Sherry has. So let's welcome Sherry H. Would you do that?
I thought pretty highly of you, Jim, till you done that. I don't want credit for nobody staying sober, because I'll have to take credit for them getting drunk. And I see one or two around here back there that, I know won't slip it down. One grinning right over there. This is a fantastic deal. I've never seen so many empty seats in all my life. My name is Sherry, and I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Hello, group. By God's grace, I'm alive, and because AA works, I'm sober, and I hadn't had a drink since December 28th, 1967. And that has been many times purely by God's grace, because I have not always been able to do what those people that I first came in contact with, who were living their lives by the principles, utilizing the principles that are found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've not always been able to do that. I want to thank Olin for all the effort that he has put into putting this thing on in his committee. And I especially want to thank Jim for asking me down here. He didn't tell me that it was going to be this early. Let me tell you how I got invited down here. Jim called me a week or so ago, and he said, "Sherry, are you well?" And I said, "Well, I'm still a drunk, a sober drunk." "No, no," he said, "I heard you was real low, about to pass." And I said, "Well, no, I'm all right, Jim." And he said, "Well, good. They asked me to look around and help them find an old-timer to talk at the meeting." Hello, Bill. And I thought of you, but somebody told me that you was really sick, and you wasn't doing too good, and you were about to die. And I said, "Well, no, but I appreciate your concern, Jim." And I said, "Are you asking me to come down there and talk?" And he said, "Oh, no, no, it was just my job to find out if you was well enough to talk if they decided to ask you." So about a week later, he called me back, and he said, "You still okay?" I said, "Yeah, Jim. Are you asking me to come down there now?" And he said, "Well, yeah, will you come? It's at 8:30 in the morning." And I said, well, my God, who's going to be out there at 8:30 in the morning? And he said, well, I'll be there. I am so pleased to be sober enough and sane enough and able enough to come anywhere that I get to visit with my family. When in Post, Texas, and many of you don't know what Post is, and all of you who do know that this weather here is nice. The sand ain't blowing. And it's not near as cold as it was out there at this time, is out there at this time of year. In Post, Texas, I was toward the end of my active alcoholism, the drinking part of my alcoholism. I almost had my disease perfected. I always wondered about, you know, when we talked about people that's still practicing. Well, I know now that what they're doing is they're practicing to perfect their illness. And mine was about perfected in 1967, in January of 67. And I was running a bar, a beer joint out there, and Beverly and I had two children, a boy and a girl. And by the way, I want to introduce my own wife. Beverly, would you stand up and holler at these people or wave at them or something, man? If it had not been for Al-Anon, I don't believe many of us would be here. Now that's my personal opinion. I know that she has a year on me because I didn't stay sober the first time I came in, but she stayed going to meetings and they told her things about if he threatens to get drunk, if you don't do something, we'll just get him a fifth and set it in front of him, grab the kids and leave. And I tried that one day. I threatened to get drunk. I said, well, boy, you ain't doing things the way I want you to do them, and I think I'll just go get drunk. And she told me what they had told her, and to just set a fifth in front of me and get the kids and leave. And I didn't have to get drunk that time, but it wasn't long after that that I did. And this one day, another fellow that was running another bar there in Post and I decided that we were going to test the law. They had a topless bar in Plainview, Texas, and we were going to try to have one in Post, Texas. And so all the bartenders and the bar owners got together and we said we invited the sheriff and all the county judge and all the JPs to come, and they assured us they'd be there. And we built this this runway on this one fellow's bar and a deal going out in the crowd there where. And we had visions of grandeur. We were going to get, and we went to Plainview and to invite these girls to come down and do their deal. And so it finally arrived at the big day, and all the bars closed except this one bar. And I remember putting on my suit and tie, and I was getting ready to, you know, go and do this deal. And I was even willing to go to jail, you know, to test this law against topless go-go dancers. And the fellow that, you know, the bartender there, that lived right down the street from me, so I just walked right down the highway to his house, and he was married, and his wife was not at all in favor of this deal. He was a little younger than I was, and Beverly had left town. She'd gone to her dad's. She wasn't going to be there when this thing was taking place. And I remember having one drink with this fella. One drink. And him and his wife was having some words. And I walked out and walked on down to the bar, the one where we were going to have this deal. And I remember walking down the highway. And then I remember waking up, and I was laid out on the couch with my arms like this, and I opened my eyes, and I could see that I was in my house, But I couldn't remember getting there, and that was real strange being laid out like this. And I kind of raised up a little bit, and I looked down, and I still had my shoes on, and my tie was done, and I hadn't been hit by a car or rolled or nothing, you know. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. And I looked out the window, and there was lights way down the highway in this all-night restaurant. And I knew that it had to be after midnight, and I couldn't remember anything since I took that one drink at this old boy's house. And I was terrified. I was literally scared, slapped to death. Now, a lot of strange things had been happening to me in the few months leading up to this event. Beverly and I lived in this big old Frankenstein house. One of them two and a half story houses, you know, that had them windows way up top and you couldn't see in them, but you just knew something strange was behind them. And it was in this big old house, there were five apartments, one on each side of each of two floors, and then one in that attic room up there that had them scary windows in it. And I can honestly say that everybody that lived in that building, with the exception of my wife, was one of us. They didn't know it yet, but they were. And I would wake up in the middle of the night. I was drinking vodka then, because you couldn't smell it. And Beverly tells me today that you might not could smell my breath, but you could sure smell it in every pore of my body, you know, as I sweat it out in weather like this. And I would wake up in the middle of the night. There he is. He finally got up. And I would get up and I'd walk the floor, and I'd have these crawly, itchy feelings all over me, and I'd take shower after shower after shower, and I couldn't get them crawly, itchy feelings off of me. And Beverly said that I'd have to have a drink, and I'd take a drink, and she said I was keeping the boogers fought off of me with a drink. And I would hear this strange music at night. And I know nobody in here has ever had that experience, but I'd hear this strange music. And one night, she was trying to console me, you know, and get me to sit down and go back to bed. And she said that she'd walk around in the neighborhood and see who'd left their car radio on or something, you know, with me. And so we was walking, and she said she heard this music, too. And I told her, I said, "Now, you just hearing me. You think I'm crazy." And she said, "No, serious business, I hear it." And I said, "If you hear this music, I want you to whistle a tune for me." And she whistled something, and I said, "That's it." And we just kept walking and looking. And she swears to this day that she heard that music. Now, I know that Al-Anons get sick. Crazy. Crazier than hell. I mean, and I know today why. Because they had to live with us. With me. I don't know about you, but I was pretty crazy when I was drinking, and it didn't get better real soon. But right after this experience of having this blackout, the first one that I really remember, I went to a doctor and asked this doctor to help me get into a VA hospital because I was a veteran. And I wanted some help. And he said, "Well, what kind of help do you want?" I said, "Well, you won't believe this, but I'm crazy. I'm having, and I don't want to die crazy, and so I want to go to the hospital and get some psychiatric help so I will be sane when I die, and I know I'm dying." And he looked at me, and he said, "Well, what do you think is causing this problem?" And I knew that my sister had probably talked to him, and so I told him, I said, "Well, I probably drank too much." I didn't believe that. I don't know if any of y'all believed you drank too much when you first got here, but I didn't believe that. And he said, "Well, I don't know much about this drinking problem, but I know a man who hadn't had a drink in 7 years. And he might would come and talk to you if you would like to visit with him and tell you how he got sober and is staying sober." And so I agreed to that, and this fellow came to see me. And his name was Bill. And Bill came to see me, and he told me a little bit of his story. And asked me if I would like to find out a little more about how he was staying sober. And I said, yeah. And so he said, well, we'll take you to this meeting tomorrow night over in Breckenridge, Texas. And so that day, I probably took a half a dozen baths and needed every one of them because I had lost total control of my bodily functions and my emotions. And he told me, he gave me phone numbers, his mother's house, his office, the coffee shop where he drank coffee, the business that he ran. And he told me, he said, if you need me, call me. So I called him. And he brought somebody else with him, and they came over, and they babysat me all that day and all that night until we loaded up to go to this meeting in Breckenridge. And we went to Breckenridge, and there was we went in this first this meeting, and there was I remember a baby grand piano sitting over in the corner, and I looked around the room, and everybody was dressed real nice, and they did not look like alcoholics, because I knew what an alcoholic was. My daddy had showed me one when I was 12 years old. He was a fellow about so tall, and he needed to shave, not quite as bad as you do, but he needed to shave. And he had on these khaki breeches, and when he walked, they just kind of waved in the breeze, you know. And they was real baggy in the behind, and he had wet on himself. And he was bumming change on the corner and to buy wine. And my daddy said, look at that, there's an alcoholic. And I was 12 years old. We were in a 40 model Mercury. It was in 1947. He had a red light in El Campo, Texas. And that moment and that scene was just engraved on my mind. It scared me to death. And I recognized this fella. I knew him. He slept in an old car behind the pool hall. And when I played hooky, you know, and went to the pool hall, he was always in there bumming change. And daddy said, that's an alcoholic. Well, my daddy wouldn't lie to me. So from then on until I came to you people, I had this vision of who and what an alcoholic was. And, Laura, there couldn't be no female alcoholics. None. They all had to be 40 years old or older, old suckers. And they had to not shave and sleep in the weeds and wet in their britches. And they bummed change for a living. And so when I came in this room, I looked around, and none of them people had been sleeping in the weeds, I didn't think, and not a one of them had wet on himself that I could tell. And they got ready to start this meeting, and they pulled these tables together, and there was a good-looking girl sat down at these tables. And all the rest of the ladies went into another room. And they started around the tables, and these fellows was giving their name. They said, my name is Joe, and I'm an alcoholic, and I hadn't had a drink since whenever. And I'd counted up, and it seemed like it was 22 years that every other one of them hadn't had a drink in that long. And I thought, well, my goodness, who's going to go that long without a drink? And this chairman told me, he said, Sherry, the way we do things out here in this part of West Texas is that when we call on you, you give your name and identify yourself, say who you are and what you are and when you had your last drink. And if you ain't an alcoholic, you don't belong in this meeting. Now, they were funny about that out there. And so he said, we don't want you to say no more than that, but we want you to say that much. So when it come my turn, well, I raised my hand and I stood up and I testified to God that I was an alcoholic and I would never take another drink again as long as I lived. I thought they was fixing to baptize me, and, you know, that'd be it. And I was confused, and I stayed confused for a long time. And they said, no, no, that's not the way we do things. What we do is we try to live one day at a time. And they began to introduce me to the steps of this beautiful God-given program of Alcoholics Anonymous. and I will be forever grateful to them for this. Because subsequent to that meeting, I began to find out about AA and about the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and the concepts for world service. I began to find out what the steps are and what they do and where the power lies to not pick up the next first drink, fix, or pill. The power does not lie with me. Today, at 29 years since I had my last drink, the power still does not lie with me. The power is God. The power comes from God. And the steps are the things that we use to get us into the state of being that will allow us to access God's power. That's what I found in the subsequent weeks, days, weeks, months, and years from that very first meeting. I went to a jitter joint. I went to a state hospital, Wichita Falls. I went there twice, and I may be the only person in this room who has a certificate saying I'm sane enough to walk the streets. They used to give them things. And, you know, I had a counselor there. His name was Henry Walker, and Henry died sober in his 22nd year of sobriety. And he died a very hard death. He died of cancer of the lungs and of the brain. And I have buried several sponsors since then, all with respiratory kinds of problems or cancer. And I'm not going to get on that preaching stump, Rick. You know, each one of those fellas put into practice the principles that they had learned from you people. And they taught me not only how to live, but how to die. Henry Walker, the last time he spoke from a podium, he was wearing a stocking cap because he'd lost all his hair. And he could not hardly stand up at this podium. And he said, "You know, they say that you can't talk about God to young people. You'll run them off." He said, "But if you run them off, whiskey will bring them back if they live." And I'm here to tell you today that you can't talk about God too much or too soon. And I hope that you understand what I'm trying to say. The steps are designed to get me into a state of being that will allow me to access the power of God, which is the only hope I have of maintaining this way of life. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sherry. Now, when Sherry started out there at the front, he was talking about me and my conversation with him. And I ain't going to say he's lying. I ain't going to say that at all, because I know that Sherry wouldn't lie. But there was parts there where he got awful loose with the truth. And I ain't even going to go over it. I'll say one thing. You're a hardy bunch. I don't know about y'all, but I'm about to freeze to death up here. And I have to be here. That's how come I'm here. And if I didn't have to be here, I think I'd be to home. So I admire your courage. You know, they say we need to go to any lengths. This next guy, I don't know Sonny that well. I've seen him a few times, but he's one of those people that you just can't help but like him. He's got that easygoing, long-time sobriety manner about him. And you all right? And he reminds me of a guy that I was thinking about this when I spent a good bit of time talking with him today. He reminds me of a guy I met years ago. I was about 1 week sober, and I was having problems. My wife wouldn't do what I wanted to do. You see, Sherry reminded me of that. He's having the same problems.
And so I got this guy named Freddie. He'd been sober about 30 years, and I got him back in the corner, and I explained to him, you know, my wife, boy, I mean, she's just total out of control. She won't do what I want her to do. And I gave him all the details, and when I got done, bless his heart, he patted me on the hand. He said, "Well, you keep coming back, Jim." Can you believe that? I'm looking forward to hearing this guy. In addition to a good story, I understand he has some good information for us. Let's welcome Sonny.
All right.
Thank you, Jim. My name is Sonny, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sonny.
By the grace of God and you people, this program, I haven't had drinks since 27th of November 1962. I planned on talking a lot longer than I'm going to talk. I got to catch a plane, go to Green Bay to the game tomorrow, see if I can thaw out. No, I had the privilege of knowing a lot of these people, and I will say that normally when I'm in a building, I don't wear anything on my head. But Sherry and me pulled this thing here off. They call it some bad things. And Sherry pulled his hat off. And I said, "Sherry, my head's cold." He said, "Mine is too." So we put our caps back on. You know, I had the privilege of knowing some of these men that started this thing here. The third meeting I went to, I went with the man that's pictures there. And my sponsor to a meeting in Rusk. I don't know anything happened in that meeting. I don't know anything happened or talked about in the car, because I was drunk. I don't recommend you go to meetings that way, but that's the way I went. And I know Morris there, one of the first members here in town, had bought a new Ford, and I got sick coming home. And from about Jacksonville to Tyler, I had to puke and swallow it, because I just swore I was not going to puke in that man's car. That was a miserable trip. But alcohol completely cleaned me. It wiped me out, and I almost missed this program. Now, I am one that almost missed this program. Sherry talking about his wife. I've been sober for 34 years, and my wife has 3 years more in Al-Anon than I have in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was and still am a very slow learner. She would go to Al-Anon every Friday night. And there was an old gentleman in town. Liv knew him. I don't know if any of the rest of you did or not. You don't hear much about him. Mr. Grover. And Mr. Grover never drove a car. And my wife would go pick Mr. Grover up, her and the two babies that we had, go to Al-Anon. I'd lay there on the floor drunk, say, "Go on down there with that bunch of cake-eating, coffee-drinking SOB." And that's the way it went for about 3 years around there. But these people took their time, and they talked to me. And I could not take the last part of the fifth step. I could tell God about it, and I could tell me about it, because I knew I wasn't going to tell anybody about it, and I didn't figure God would. So I think that was really the reason I couldn't make this thing. They told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I went to 120 in 90 days and got drunk, stayed that way for 6 months. Another man that came in this program in 1948, his name was Foster. And I told him, I said, "You know, I read that book, and I went to 120 meetings in 90 days, been drunk for a long time." He said, "Sonny man, I'm going to tell you something. When you read that book, read the black, and when you go to meetings, listen." And so, finally I did. And you know, It's been a fine life. If I'd have planned the last 30-some-odd years of my life, I'd have left the good things out. I'd have left this program out. My priorities were very, very mixed up. I want to thank everybody for coming, and I know you're miserable out there because it is cold in this building. And I thank God for this program. I thank God for the people that brought it here and that put up with me because it did save my life. And if you're new on this program, keep coming. If you get drunk, come back. And you will find, you'll find it. Just by God's grace am I here today. I, like most people in this room, should have been dead a long time ago. And except by the grace of God, I would be. Thank you.
How about a hand for all of these three speakers?
Yeah.
I think they did a good job, and I know Olin's relieved that they were able to talk for the full hour here. I want to thank Olin for asking me to come up here and freeze to death. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I've been cold, but I've really enjoyed it. And Miss Jean is going to finish this thing up. She's a lot better announcer than I am, so she's going to finish this thing up. It won't take but a minute.